Welcome to selfdiscoverymedia.com, where the Orchard of Wisdom shows are at your fingertips. It ignites your soul, your heart, your spirit, your mind, and your body with illumination from people who have made the journey before you. They're here now to help you on your journey, on your path of self-discovery. We are funded by you, the audience, and the people we interview. If you wish to support us, please go to selfdiscoverymedia.com and press on our Fund Action button. Anything is appreciated. We would like you to sit back and enjoy the shows. Here we go. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of Choose Positive Living right here on selfdiscoverymedia.com. I'm your host, Sarah Troy. My wonderful guest is Chet Sisk, a futurist. Well, what is a futurist, right? He's an author. He's a visionary. He focuses on developing organizations and individuals that can thrive and succeed in a time of massive change affected by climate change, technology evolution, social and political disruption. Oh, I love it. He has spoken on these subjects at the United Nations. He has presented in almost 30 countries, including South Africa, Albania, Malaysia, Nigeria, the Netherlands, and Bahrain, I think that's how you pronounce it. And he pushes us to merge diversity, equality, and inclusion in all our pre-imagination of society and the future. All of the challenges and the opportunities facing our community right now are ultimately related to our DEI position. Well, I want to dive right into it. I love anybody that looks at the future, not through rose-colored glasses, but sees it as a beautiful blank canvas that we could rise up to more sophisticated paint and paint a really better vision for ourselves. Welcome to the show, Chet.
Thank you so much, Sarah. It is a pleasure and an honor. I know it's been really crazy of late for me, and I cherish the moments that we have together because I recognize they are fleeting in the schedule. And the reason why for me it's been so crazy is because once you say that you're a futurist and you're going to figure out or at least help people to kind of walk through the next few years,
yes,
then all of a sudden people are like, oh, okay, get this guy. So I don't talk about flying cars 50 years from now. I talk about what's going to happen over the next few years. And that's, you know, people talk about, oh, you're the guys who make predictions. Well, that's part of the deal, but really from a futurist perspective, all we're really following are decisions that we've made collectively.
Yes.
So if we make a decision about something, there is an inevitable outcome to that decision. So it's not like rocket science, like, oh, I wonder what people are thinking. Look around. But like decisions, all decisions, we can change our minds.
Yes.
And so my job, I'm not like a dispassionate observer from afar and saying, oh, here's the data that exists, blah, blah, blah. That's not me. My job is to say, okay, here's what we're seeing. And here is an option of something better, more inclusive, more empowering, more visionary than we may have thought about before. And the only reason I even started taking that position is that I used to be a television news reporter. And one
have
of the
voice and the looks for it.
Yeah. Let me tell you something. I hated it. I got fired. I was
wasn't your job, but it was an experience you needed.
Thank you. But I had a fight with the news director in the middle of the newsroom. And it was just, he said, you're fired. I said, you can't fire me. I quit. And I and, you know, it was one of those.
Yes.
But one of the things that I discovered from it was there was a deep concentration on the negative.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Because from
fear cells.
Yeah.
Those that are in control fry from it, right? Yeah.
We get an endorphin release from fear. We get some kind of satisfaction from it. I mean, that's the reason why we go and ride on roller coasters, right? Or go to horror movies, because there's a release, there's a payoff. And the news people and the advertising people have figured that out. So I kept thinking to myself that, you know, this is not where I want to be necessarily, but it really gave me context that most of what we were getting was the most negative, the scariest things that were out there. And I said, well, what about the other side? So I became more of an advocate, futurist, more so than just a dispassionate observer. So that's how I got into the business. It's the same principles. So the same principles work in news and in futurism. You basically follow, you know, you follow a story over an extended period of time. You follow the money because that usually tells the truth. You look for historical context. And then you use your intuitive self to say, where have I seen this before? And what's happening?
Yeah.
Just the basic question.
Yeah, it kind of a map reader. You know, I'm a seer, you know, by God's design. I see possibilities in people it's just, I can see what they can do, where they can do it, why they can do it. You know, it's just, it comes to me. And some people have that knack and some people don't. But when you base it, when you look at the current climate, you look at past climates of change because, you know, as I was saying before the show, the universe gave me a saying, the universe is going to shake us up, to wake us up, for us to step up, to change it up, and then grow up. But the grow up is a double entendre. Grow up to a higher frequency, because when you're in that frequency of love, you can't knowingly do any harm to anyone else without harming you. But also, let's grow up and stop be acting like, you know, spoiled teenagers, a tantrum to, you know, terrible twos, you know, because resistance is futile because change is here. We're in the midst of it.
Yeah.
But where that change is going, we've been given the most wonderful invitation of a blank canvas to paint what we want to see.
Yep.
And instead of feeding that negativity, instead of listening to the news of doom and gloom all the time, you know, feeding the fear mongers, because they're getting rich off it, they're benefiting from it, they're getting their fix from it, right? Yeah. It's like, you know, it's what you seed, what you water, what you nurture is what's going to grow. What are you seeding? What are you watering? And the possibilities that we've been shown right now are illuminating.
Yes.
But are we going to choose to participate?
Yeah, and I think that's what you and I are here to do. And by the way, I absolutely love this, that you are a seer, because remember back in the day in indigenous communities, you always had a seer in the village, that one that concentrated on what's coming up.
Yes.
I'd like to think of myself as a glorified seer, but it's the same thing, that your job is to say, this is what's coming up and here are the options
that
we should be able to take.
And so, if you don't touch into your intuitive side, you know, you can see all your practicals, you know, the numbers, the this, the that. I mean, I call it backtracking here into what knowingness is. You know, knowingness is when the gut, the soul intuition, knows what it needs to know. It resonates with the heart in truth. It goes to the spirit interaction, and the mind will know what it needs to know when it needs to know it.
Right.
So that knowingness of, I just see it. Mm-hmm. I just know it. Yeah. Now, it's the understanding of what I know. That's where you come down into the intellectualism and put it all together. Now, you've taken all the studying of what you've done, but you've tapped into the knowingness and you've put the two together, which gives you a clearer picture.
Yeah, that's very true. In fact, I'm going to riff a little bit on what you've just really shared from a nerd's perspective. I mean, I grew up as a science fiction nerd. And
I'll meet you. I'm a sci-fi girl.
I'll confess, I was a band geek too. I was the guy who played in marching band with the Spats and stuff like that.
Great. Anyway, right. So you were in the beat of the life, right?
Thank you. Exactly. But I grew up on Star Trek and all of those things.
Star Wars, Avatar, you name it. Yes.
Okay, right. So I'm just going to riff just a little bit. So this is one of the things that I discovered, is that there's this guy by the name of Frank Drake. He was a scientist. He created the Drake equation. And basically he says, out of the billions of planets and stars in our solar system, in our galaxy, 100 million of them have, you know, other human beings. They're there.
Life forms,
Right. So then Enrique Fermi came up and he said, and he's another scientist who came back and said, okay, if that's true, where are they? It's called the Fermi's paradox. He said, if all those beings are out there, where are they? So then another guy, a Russian cat, comes up, Nikolai Kardashev, and he says, well, the problem is, the reason why we're not seeing all of them is because that next level of civilization is really difficult. He says, every civilization, and I I knew what he was saying before he even said it. But he said every civilization arrives at this point, this inflection point, right? This come to Jesus moment where they get a chance to either grow the hell up or collapse under the weight of their own madness, right?
Right.
Where if they do, I mean, you can't get to that point unless you get to this point.
Yes, so exactly.
This point brought us here where we get a chance to say, who do we want to be? Mm-hmm. How can we become that? So we can't get there unless we get, unless we were brought to this point.
Yes.
So I hope for those of you who are like, oh my God, I'm like, you know what? This the only way for us to get to the next point is to get here. And he says that, you know, most civilizations just didn't make it. They collapsed under their weight. So there may be 100 million out there, but maybe a really tiny percentage really made the next level of the journey to become a level one civilization. And so I believe there's a part of me that says we're right there.
I agree with you. I agree.
Yeah, you know, but it becomes really useful for you and I to really articulate that so that people can have a vision of what it's like on the other side.
Can I take it a step further?
Yes, please.
Okay. The step further is this, which might blow a few minds. There's two things. When we actually elevate to the higher dimensional level frequency, we not only will see the other entities and identify them because we'll be on that same vibration, but we will also realize that many of them were willingly to go into our consciousness and become us. They are already amongst us. There are many that are here that are not earthlings, where they've chosen the earthly body to be a part of that catalyst to move people forward. We have to rise up to a higher frequency for many reasons. One, we're hurting this planet desperately, desperately.
Yeah.
She's cracking up and she's not laughing, right? And it's because of this heavy vibration that we keep penetrating down into her, right? And ignoring, we're abusing her quite essentially. Yeah. And in abusing her, we're abusing ourselves.
Yep.
Because she can't provide for us, right? The abuse of ourselves in the way that we talk to ourselves, the way we view ourselves, and everything that we, the way we treat ourselves, this is why we talk about self-love being extremely important. Because when you are become the state of love, again, you can't knowingly hurt anyone else. And you see the love and light in other people, and you become that beacon of light. I believe they've already been among us for a long time. And they are part of the catalyst in shifting us forward. And when we do reach up to that higher consciousness, that higher level, we will actually see those that are still in body form or in some sort of form, actually see them for what they are. But, you know, like the arrogance and the ignorance to think we're the only species in the universe. You know, come on, please.
That makes no sense whatsoever. But it's in keeping with
we're
the
still
kind
in
of
kindergarten
adolescent, juvenile kind of like thing. So we keep running into each other, but there's a reason why besides the fact that we're attracting the same vibration, there's something else that's happening too. As in all of, you know, a lot of the things that we can learn, really all we have to do is go out and look in nature, right?
Yes. Yes.
When nature is about to introduce something, she always sends out the early adapters, right? Just a part like, okay, this is where we're going. And then sometimes we're like, we dismiss the early adapters or cut them down and say, they're weeds and blah, blah, blah. But the early adapters are really a signal to how that particular species or plant life or whatever is going to change into something. So there are enough of us out there now like, hey, I know you.
Yes.
Hey, I know you too.
We're on the same vibe.
Yes. And I want to say this too. Don't, for those of you out there who are thinking like, they're not quite like me and they don't go to my, you know, my church or synagogue or belief system or whatever, don't do that, because it manifests, the same spirit manifests differently across the board. And then it shows up in us as the key becomes, are we talking about the transformation of humanity or, as a lot of people would do that I ran into, they would talk about making a difference. Now watch out when people say making a difference, because what they're really saying underneath it all is that they really are talking about tweaking the status quo, but not transformation. There is a difference. And I want to throw that out to our the viewing and listening audience that everybody that says they want to make a difference is not talking about transformation. Transformation requires us to say whatever we're seeing right now has to become something else in order for us to survive and to become our greatest selves. We can't do it by just tweaking around the edges.
No, there's a complete overhaul needed, yeah. Right? There really is. Yeah. And, I just had this gentleman on his own spiritual journey. I mean, literally, winded up on the shores in Burma, discovers the monastery there, and everything that's happened there. Yeah. And then, he writes a book about all the what he's learned from it, the gift that he was giving. Mm-hmm. And, the more and more people wake up to the fact that being of service and giving is the greatest gift that you will receive, right. The more you understand it's a transaction of energy. And the more energy that we rise up to, that frequency, more that abundance of energy that rises up, the more we actually see the answers, because we aren't going to find them in that lower register.
It makes so much sense. But of course, you and I both know that there's a great deal of investment in maintaining the status quo. Mm-hmm. And those people are willing to do whatever they need to do in order to try to do that. But they can't stop. As we used to say back in the rap days, you can't stop the bum rush. There's something that's happening. And it's either you're going to be a part of it or you'll be sitting on the sidelines wondering. You talked about the guy who went to Burma. I want to tell you just a little bit, really short story about my own personal journey. I had everybody should do a vision quest. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you don't even know what that is. And yes. So I don't want people to sit back and go, I got to find my vision quest. It's not quite like that.
Yeah. So
mine was more serendipity. But I do remember I was doing some voiceover work actually for a guy who was doing a film about the Khoisan. Mm-hmm. And these are the most ancient people on the face of the planet, and they live in Southern Africa. I sat back and I was like, I don't know why I hadn't even heard of them until mm-hmm. that moment, but they fascinated me. So yeah. I got fascinated and then I had been teaching at the University of KwaZulu-Natal in Durban and Peter Maritzburg in South Africa. Mm-hmm. I'd spent some time there, some summers.
I had 11 and a half years in South Africa.
Oh, well, there you go. So, I loved teaching there. It was great. It was a leadership course. And then, I called them and I said, listen, I want to do a visit to the Khoisan. And they were like, okay, we'll make it happen. So I called in all my favors, took this giant trip from Denver, Colorado, all the way down to the middle of the Kalahari, met with the Khoisan, sat around with their elders, and they were like, and of course, you always ask the basic question, what's the secret of life? And yes. They're like, oh, it's always love, yes. And connectedness.
Yes.
And then they told me about the principle of Ubuntu. Mm-hmm. And they said, there's a philosophical foundation called Ubuntu. They're explaining this to me through an interpreter. It says, everything and everyone is connected. I am because we are because I am. And I was like, oh, mm-hmm. that makes sense. So I come back to the States. I'm, carrying this with me wherever I go. And then a few years later, I'm dating this one woman and she says, you should take the DNA test. Just do it. She was just all into it. And I'm like, nah, because I'll find that I have a serial killer in my mind. I would rather not know. But no, it's not like that. Just take it. And so she gifted it to me. I took it. She calls me up one day and she says, well, I'm at work. And she's like, oh my God, she was in tears. And I was like, what? She says, you're from the same haplogroup of the Khoisan. You are Khoisan.
That's why you were so attracted.
Yes. And I'm like, how can that be? And she says, here's the data. She showed it to me. And then I found out that I was 275,000 years old and all those things, the same DNA that existed in the Khoisan was transferred to me.
Right.
So that's made me realize, I kept thinking, I am that message in the bottle. We all have these messages, but I was like, I'm the message in the bottle about Ubuntu, that the concept of every man for himself, rugged individualism, that's the thing that collapses society.
Yes.
That we can't make it to a level one society, holding on to that kind of concept. But the one of Ubuntu is more robust, it's more agile, it's more flexible, and it's more adept at being able to handle massive change than one guy at the top. And if he decides to, the command and control model, if he decides to go rogue or go into a strange place, the entire system collapses.
Right.
So when I explain that to corporations in my futurism stuff, they're like, how come we weren't taught that? I said, because somebody had a vested interest in maintaining that power at the top. You know how this stuff
goes. Well, it is all about, you know, you've got to start at the bottom and you go up the layers and you think you're achieving and you think you're getting there. You're just really a puppet on the string. Yeah. And then when you get to the top, oh, now you're in the ivory tower, but you've lost all connection and reason to, you know, to the humbleness at the bottom and the growth. And there's that complete disconnect. I did a series, you know, called Let's Get Sync series, which was around the mental climate over climate change. And all that's being done, and, you know, one of them is Pure Necessity, his company, and it's about people and planet for profit, not profit at the expense of people and planet. Just changing those P's around changes the entire perception. How can we keep raping and pillaging, you know, and expecting it to complete providing? It doesn't happen that way. We have to change. And, you know, going back to what you were saying about, you know, that connection of we are all one. The village is something that I use as analogy a lot of that village is only as strong as everybody's participation. All right. You don't have two butchers or two candle makers. You have, you know, everybody there has a role to play. That's their instrument. That's their contribution. Mm-hmm. When things are sad, they're there. When things are glad, they're there. Mm-hmm. And they know that that strength is in each other. Yeah. Now, it's not about their village against the other village. Mm-hmm. Right. It's about their village being so abundant they could share with the other village and vice versa. Yeah. So I think looking at the I, me, myself, is about who are you, how rich and abundant are you, and how much can you share it with others?
Yes, yes. And that's a new concept. I'll just say this, I'm going to be more specific. There is an avocation inside of Western culture that is, I would say that it powers against a life-affirming belief system. Mm-hmm. And because we're not specific about it, we tend to talk in generalities. Like, right. Oh, you know, if people would just do the right thing, what we really should say, is there an alternative to some of the concepts that we have embraced and taken for granted? Like, oh, this is how life works. It's not how life works. It's just some.
It's how you're working life.
Yes. And it's an idea. I wrote a book called Think This, Not That. It's time to update your conventional wisdom. And it was based around the idea that a lot of stuff that guides our lives are really some concepts and ideas that not only are they not based in truths, they are based in like really deep falsehoods. But we've been repeating them for so long, we think that they're true. And a lot of that is embedded in a lot of Western thought. Mm-hmm. We just haven't been courageous enough to say the emperor has no clothes.
Yes. So,
now we have to.
He'll be arrested.
We're at the place where we have to be able to. And I'm not one of those people that believes that you have to call out all of the stuff in order for you to move forward. I'm one of those people who believe you have to create proof of concept, models, ideas, and a life that people would say, whatever I that is it. That you're doing, I want to get to that.
Yeah.
So you live out that truth and not just talk about it. As my dad would say, don't talk about it, son, be about
it. Do it. Yes, yeah. My word last year was actionism. You know, activism is talking about it. Action is doing something about it, right? And this word this year is ignition. Put yourself into gear. It's time to get moving forward. But, talking about just because, I love certain traditional things, you know, British, we've got a lot of traditions. Some of them, they're based in real practicality or really heartwarming, you know, it's something that's a really nice tradition. But just because, well, we've always done it that way, doesn't make it the right way. You've read the book, Who Moved My Cheese by Spencer Johnson, right?
I have. I've read, yes.
Right. Very simple concept, two men, two mice around abundance of trees and the reaction when it's gone. Right. Now, it's such a simple book. I'm a true colors coach, so we really kind of look at the four key personalities there. But it is the way we live our life is our perception of life. And if we feel that life is out to get us, to take things away from us, to deny us, then we're always going to be pissed. Yes. But if we look at instead life, the life is filled with opportunities, filled with possibilities. I've just got to be open, ready to receive what they are.
Yes.
Then you'll start seeing them.
Yes, that's very true. Now, let me offer this too as a thought. There was a guy who came to me and he said, you know, if we just visualize things, all kinds of things will come to us. Yes. I believe that.
Yeah, paint the canvas you want to see or you want to live, right?
Yes.
Yes.
However, I challenged him and I said, you want to share that conversation with the folks in Somalia who are now under attack and a war?
Yeah.
And then he said, oh, well, they're just not believing deeply enough. That becomes that spiritual arrogance that sometimes we lean into, where we start to believe because we live in a Western environment where we have the opportunities for those things. And if you're living in Somalia at that time of the war, the same infrastructure that would provide those opportunities didn't exist.
Exactly. So it was like,
and that happens. In fact, I've been in and out of spiritual communities because I had a real issue with a kind of an arrogance that will happen with us because of the fact that we live in an environment that provides those kinds of ladders for success.
Yes.
I especially had that with The Secret. Mm-hmm. I had this guy who gets up in the movie and he says, yeah, if I believe long and hard enough, and now I have this giant mansion. And I kept thinking, is that really the message that we
have? Exactly. Exactly. Where, so, is that really enrichment?
That part. So there, once we start to drill down into the nuance, I think it helps our message. It helps us to be clearer, not just to those who are already in our camp, but to people. I was a volunteer at a homeless shelter for 12 years. Mm. And the first thing that I'd come into the place and I'd say, yeah, you know, it was a life coach position. They said, we need a life coach at a homeless shelter. I had just at that time lost, I went bankrupt. My company went bankrupt. My wife left me and she even took the dog. So I was,
not the dog.
I know, right? So I was, by the way, I'm best friends with my ex-wife now. We're great. We've traveled through our little space. But one of the things that I went into the class and they said, well, what are you going to tell us, college boy? We're right. Homeless. Some of us are, you know, just got out of jail, going through drug abuse, violence, and all of those things. And I said, well, here's my story. Mm-hmm. And then they said, okay, you can stay for a while.
Right.
So what happens now is that we want to be able to communicate at all levels, because I used to say, and I still say this, if it's not for all, it's not for any. Mm-hmm. So it can't be like those who do well, they can get it. And then those who don't do well, it doesn't make any sense. It's got to be something that can travel across the board. And that was my first book. 7 Steps to Success I Learned from Homeless People.
And I've been homeless myself. Unfortunately, I had a van I could live in, but I didn't have any license on the van. So I had to constantly navigating the streets so that I wouldn't get caught and finding a place to sleep in, you know. And I've done numerous business ventures and it's at the time, it's like, yeah, but why? The vision was so strong.
Right.
Right. And it's like, yes, the vision was so strong to take you down that path, but that was not what you were meant to learn. That was not what you were meant to achieve. It was just part of what you needed to learn for where you're really meant to go. So, you know, just because you're down and out, just because you feel a little hopeless, and yes, it's okay to feel hopeless and helpless at a time, because that bottoming out, where else have you got to go? Up.
Yeah, there's a phrase I used to use. It's in my book. It says, the best view to the top can be seen looking up from the bottom.
Exactly. Yeah. Laying there in the dirt, looking up. It's only one way up now. Or having that conversation with God and going, okay, all right. I know you're laughing. But what now?
Yeah.
And that open and willingness not to bitch and moan about it, but to open up and go, okay, what's next? I'm ready to receive.
Yes, yes, exactly.
That's how my podcasting came about from that too.
Oh, look at you. Well, you're doing the I think the greatest work that there is, and that is to be able to offer an opportunity for people to be able to reimagine that. Because my experience has been, especially inside of media, is that we tend to get locked into a certain viewpoint. And then we seek, of course, the confirmation. Confirmation yes. bias happens to all of us. All of
right.
us.
Right, exactly.
That. But the challenge that we face is that because most of the icons around us tend to lean into the negative. That's just part of our human experience. I think it's left over from envisioning the saber-toothed tiger, maybe right around the corner. The idea that an opportunity would also be in the same place at the same time doesn't get the same kind of support. So it is our job to support that. Yes, people say, oh, all hell could break loose. And you go, yes, and so could this other part.
Right.
And you should know that these opportunities exist at the same time that you are envisioning all of the terrible things. They right. both exist in the same place at the same time. So you are providing that, I think, a platform for us to at least provide that basic conversation so people don't get tied up into one part of the thought.
Right. The diverse conversations from people who actually have been there, who walked the walk and now sharing it, right? And that's the premise of everything. They are making a difference because they're showing the difference they made in their lives.
Yeah.
Right. And so inspiration begets invitation. And when you're inspired by someone, it invites you to start moving forward yourself, right?
Yes.
Which is really, really important.
Yes.
You know, talking about the, you know, kind of the visioning is we wonder why something felt so sure. It felt so right. And then it was so wrong. And it is, and we go, you know, like, why, you know, and you go into that deep mud pit or Murphy of grabbing hold of you, not letting you out. Why me, you know, all of that. And it's like, you know, okay, spend that emotion. You're grieving actually for something that's a loss. It's okay to grieve that. It's okay to be mad. Just don't become emotional about the emotion. Spend the emotion, take a deep breath, recenter yourself and go, okay, you know, what now? How do I move forward? And just like what you're doing, going into businesses and organizations and showing them how to move forward, because this is the canvas I see that is possible.
Yes.
You're igniting the vision inside of them.
Yes.
You're showing them what is possible. Half the time, people can't accept the change because they have the inability to see what's possible.
I know. And I keep saying that when we have a ton of other seers and speakers on that level, we get a chance. I'm a firm believer of this. I'm sorry, I cut that thought off, but
okay.
I'm a firm believer.
You go where the thoughts take you.
that there is, even though you don't hear about us on the evening news or on
mainstream
CNN
media
or Fox or anything, we're probably doing the greatest work because we're doing it at the grassroots level.
Yes.
And I think that that, and there just needs to be more of us. In fact, that is our obligation at this particular moment as the early adapters.
That's the invitation.
Yes. To just step into, just lean into it and say, listen, and not to insult people's space, because I get it. One of the things I did learn from television news is that people hold on to a particular idea because that's all they've had or it has not been challenged, right? So it becomes a truth. And so going in and saying, nah, that's wrong. You should get something right. They'll sit back and go, really? I'm out.
Exactly.
You know, but all of a sudden I started doing this, they were like, yeah, you know, because the world is going to hell and Revelation said it.
Yeah.
And I said, wow, okay. I said, let me add to what Revelation's also said. And there's an opportunity for us to become greater, right? And they go, yeah. And here's that moment. And so we're really extending and empowering Revelations by talking about our own personal journey of empowerment and enlightenment. Wouldn't you agree? Yes. So now it's not about either or, which is really this crazy dichotomy that we've lived in really the past few hundred years where we say either it's this or it's that.
Yeah.
The reality is life is much more nuanced and we should have nuanced conversations about possibilities as opposed to saying, stop doing that and do this.
Yes.
As if somehow.
My way or the highway.
My way or the highway. You're wrong.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you're pointing a finger, right? It's their fault, or you this, or you that. How many fingers are pointing back at you?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Now, yeah. Where's your accountability? Where's your participation? Where's your solution? Yeah. Right. You know, we can't always stop what happens to us. Mm-mm. You know, part of it is design life lessons. Part of it is our choices. But, you know, shoot's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
How we choose to react to it, what we choose to learn from it, how we choose to change the narrative to, okay, that was uncomfortable. That was pretty icky. But, you know, okay, what did I learn? Well, you know what? One thing I learned is I could stand up again.
Yeah.
Stood up.
Yes.
They didn't keep me down. I stood up.
Yes. Yes.
And that's kind of the first step, isn't it?
Yes, it really is. And let me just add a dimension to us. As an African-American, I can tell you one of the things that become that I've noticed. And in fact, the whole aspect of being a visionary is something that has, I mean, you have to really develop traction about being visionary inside of the African-American community. And people were like, yeah, they should be more visionary. I said, let me stop you right here. 400 and some odd years of a concept that said, you are not this,
yes,
you are not,
yes,
has entrenched itself. In fact, it's even made itself a part of the culture.
Right.
So now you have an entire culture based around survival as opposed to being able to envision something else. So I'm a little bit of a, and I don't want to exaggerate it, but I'm a little bit of an anomaly inside of an environment where it is, you know, I mean, if you didn't talk about the challenge and the pain really of those 400 some odd years, you didn't have much of a conversation, period.
Yeah.
So yeah. Now we get a chance, and I keep saying, especially to the African-American community, I said, the very things that you thought held you back are also the slingshot that will propel you forward. You can leverage the challenge that you walk through, yes, and then live to tell about it, and then talk about, here is the next phase of that life.
Right.
So it's you have to kind of change the conversation. And that's really kind of helped me to really be able to speak to the companies and organizations, mm-hmm, especially when they're going through change management.
Yes.
Because they tend to look at it from the place of, oh, you know, these things. And I'm like, let me just speak from an African-American perspective, that these things can be leveraged for the greater good, not only for just you, but really for your community, if you're able to retool it and yes, you develop the infrastructure to support it. Because I think every once in a while, I there was a guy who said, oh, you're going to be a motivational speaker. I said, hell no. And mm-hmm, the reason why I say that is because motivational speakers are like cotton candy. They come in, they say a lot of nice stuff, and then people
sugar highs. Leave.
You get the sugar high and you go home, yay!
Crash.
Crash. Thank you. That part. And I said, no, we have to develop the infrastructure to support people in this next phase. And otherwise, it's the forces of the negative are so strong inside of popular media, popular culture, that they don't stand a chance against that wave. So we have to create the infrastructure that comes back and supports them and say, listen, there's more. That's why we created if I can give a shameless plug for Universal Basic Research, the UBR Masterclass, is because we started realizing that not only if I'm gonna go out and do these presentations with the organizations and individuals, I also wanna do a follow-up to say, we're going to remind you and provide you with tools so that you will continue on this particular path and you're not left to your own devices.
Exactly.
Because if we're left to our own devices, let's face it, we go to default, and default is always fear. Right.
Well, you're not preaching, you're teaching.
Yes.
Right?
Different.
There is a difference. And the thing is, you've been solutional. So you are actually, like the Lex Get Sync thing, you are a climate change changer. Not yes, just a climate change, but the changing of the climate, yes, of the way we see things. Now, let's look at climate change. You know, people are holding on to the oil, holding on to the coal, because it's always been, it provides the jobs. I can't remember who it is, but I saw it on some program. A couple of guys many years ago went to the government about closing down coal mines and restructuring into a newer energy, and they were shut down. And they said, you know what, we're going to do it ourselves. And at that point, which was several years ago, they had closed down, I think, was either 13 or 18 coal mines. And they'd taken every single one of those people, retired those that were at that retiring age, re-educated the people into a different job, a different career that paid more, that was safer, that generated more, and also reinvigorated our climate energy. So the positives that came out of that, and it's that back to that fear of change, where we have to change the mental climate before we can change anything else.
Yes.
And if we don't change, we stagnate. What happens? Mosquitoes start coming flying around, right? And who likes a mosquito? So.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I love that level of story. That's very similar to what we're doing with universal basic mm-hmm. resources. We recognize that the entrenchment of the systems mm-hmm. that exist are formidable, and yes. people underestimate their desire to hold on to that level of their wealth. So what we have to do is that with UBR, we decided to create something called a Climate Strong Initiative, where we would go and create these interdependent communities that basically created climate strong, adaptive, and resilient businesses mm-hmm. so that we develop a lifestyle around climate adaptation and resilience,
yes.
as opposed to just a reaction like, oh, I wonder if Elon Musk is going to build a solar panel in space to deflect the sun, blah, blah, blah. We're waiting for a savior complex, waiting
right.
for somebody else to do it, as opposed to empowering communities to say, let's take it in our own hands. And we just don't have the time to wait. So
what you're doing, I'm going to draw a different analogy here, is that recently here in British Columbia, we had this atmospheric floods come one after yes. the other. And it washed away our artery to all of our goods that come from back east. Oh, it drowned three cities and an entire agriculture, you know, as a vegetarian, I didn't mind about too much, but you know, the meat, the chicken, the industry, and yeah. homes completely lost, land yes. so contaminated now. It takes 8 years for fruition of blueberries to come into thing, and those are gone completely. And uh-huh. the devastation is still ongoing, but the community stepped in. It was the community flying food, flying people out, doing this, doing that. It was the community saying, we need this, we need that, we need to go to change. No, don't just rebuild the road, rebuild a sustainable, something that's this, something is that. And it is out of catastrophes that we start seeing innovation.
Yes.
Right. So that is the collective force where we come together and we see what the need is. Why can't we see it in our own personal lives?
Ooh, that's good. Let me throw something else out there too. I believe that we can see it in our own personal lives when we can see it mirrored
in something else.
Yes, I think so. Ask me next week and I'll sit back and say, I changed my mind.
No, you're right. Again, from all the shows that I've done, is that, again, I say inspiration begets invitation. When you listen to a show of what somebody's gone through, and you know, maybe you haven't gone through exactly the same thing, but there's something there that you resonate with. Mm-hmm. And then you hear how through that process, they've become this and they're doing that and they're living in their own personal abundance now. And it's like, okay, what skills, what tools, what this, what that, I need to apply that to myself, right?
Yes.
So,
you
talked about storytelling beforehand. Instead of coming in and saying, well, you've got to do this and you've got to do that and da-da-da-da, which immediately puts everybody against the wall. Instead of coming in, this is my story. What's your story? Look at the similarities in our story.
Yes.
What did we learn from those stories? Where can we go from here?
Yes. Now, that was what we did at the homeless shelter. Mm-hmm. Before we got it, in the Black church, it's called testimony service. So you get up and testify about all the things that God has done for you, right? So I would get up and I'd say, okay, I'm going to tell you my story. Every single class, I'd tell them my story. And I said, now I want you to share your story. And if I didn't share mine, people were not, they were hesitant. But once they got going and they started sharing their stories, everybody saw a piece of themselves in somebody else's story.
Yes.
And then they were like, I said, as you see, we're all doing this together. We're all walking through this journey. So there's no story that's worse or better than anybody else's. We're just all going through the human experience. So that the whole aspect of testifying, telling that story. And just like you said, to be able to see ourselves and the solutions inside of other people's stories, because that's exactly what was happening.
Exactly.
People were sitting back and saying, I should have tried that. And they were like, yeah, well, this worked for me. This didn't work for me.
Yeah.
But we get a chance to talk about it.
So. And you realize that life hasn't got it out for you.
Yeah.
Right? Circumstances in life, you know, I have a series called Forgotten Children series, which is very close to my heart. A book will be coming out with collective chapters in it, hopefully this year. Mm. But, you know, I look at every dysfunctional adult has had a dysfunctional upbringing, right? Yeah. And you look at their childhood, where even though the parents were best intent,
yeah,
there is something there that we can't go through life without some form of trauma. And we have no idea of the impact of that or the long-term impact of something. And the necessity to actually, when somebody's going through something, no matter the age, no matter the articulation, of giving them space to say, I see you, I hear you, I'm here for you.
Yeah.
Now imagine if we did that with our children. Imagine if we, instead of taking children away from the parents, help the parents be better parents, more securities, and teach them and show them how that love of their children and how to maintain that amongst all the worries of the bills and everything else. Imagine the community stepping in and helping that family be more enriched. Imagine that community branching out and creating cities. Mm-hmm. Imagine the ripple effect.
Right. Exactly what you're saying. That's the part that I'm really leaning into toward, because of the fact that in my observation, the first thing that came to me was, I think we can do these things individually. People would say we can change lives one conversation at a time. And I'm like, yes, that's true. But now we have to scale simply because of the moment that we're in. So to me, at this particular moment, we have to create a level of infrastructure that allows us to scale. So we have to think differently than about, I'm going to just have a conversation with my neighbor. You're going to have a conversation with your community. So
it,
the same conversation, but at scale. And and that, I think, is the next phase of what we're doing.
Well, I mean, you know, what happened for a long time was, you know, I'm British, do not air your dirty linen out in public, right?
And
stiff upper lip, suck it up. Nobody wants to know, you know, and the whole drama that went along with it. And, you know, when I actually told my family I was writing my book, they're horrified. What are you going to put in it? You know, and it's petrified of what I might say. Sure. The thing is, I'm going to own my flaws. I'm going to own everything because it's what's made me who I am today. And I like who I am. It took me a long time to get there. I'm perfectly okay with who I am now. Mm-hmm. The whole point about this whole thing of like behind closed doors or this facade, everything is fine. And underneath it, the starving and there's anguish is we've put shame and blame on people who are suffering.
Yeah.
Who are being abused, who are being neglected, who can't get the job. We put shame and blame on the homeless, just losers. Then just go and get a job.
Yeah.
You know what? Take your judgment, go and put it somewhere else because it doesn't belong here.
Yeah. And I would venture to say this too. That hasn't always been the perspective of humanity.
No.
I think what will happen, and this is a guy came to me at one time and he said, well, we've always been like this. In fact, I was a DEI conversation. And he was saying like, well, humankind has always been like this. And I said, that's just not true. You haven't done your homework.
Right.
I said, this is a fairly relatively new in the phase of humanity's existence, this whole selfishness and just what you were talking about, not sharing and separation and disconnection, not only from other human beings, but from the planet, from living things, from everything, just disconnection. That's a fairly relatively new concept in humanity. And I would venture to say that has taken us into the place that we are now.
I agree with
you. So I believe though, that the remnant of community, of connectedness, I think it rests inside of everyone. You said this at the beginning of our conversation about how there is a reward when we do for others.
Right.
So that means it's baked into our DNA.
Yes.
For others. So our job is to quit going against the natural tendency of us and allowing it to be dictated by the past few hundred years and start saying, what goes back even deeper? Our whole aspect of connectedness, of how we see the sacredness of nature, the sacredness of all living things.
The reliance on each other.
Yeah, yes, exactly. The interdependence of things, pre-misogyny.
Racism. Wish I lived in that time.
pre-racism, pre-classism. That's not to say that all societies were living in Shangri-La.
Right, exactly.
It only means that there was a value system, what I call a feminine aesthetic, that existed prior to the rise of what we're experiencing now. And so I believe that we have an edge if we tap into it and show the possibilities of that, as opposed to trying to, like, we're going to go against the other guys and we're going to face them off. It's not about trying to be what they are, you know, fight them. It's about tapping into that which already exists and then being able to create the infrastructure or the ecosystem that allows people to be able to say, oh, I get reward from this.
Right.
And we're like, yeah, and we're going to support you in that.
The more you have, the more you can give, and the more you give, the more you receive. Right. You know, from working with the homeless people, just seeing any of them changing their perspective, any of them seeing hope, any of them stepping up, standing up, willing to change it up. Yes. And you had even a molecule of impact on that. The gift that you receive from seeing that human being step into themselves.
Yes.
There is no other gift. There is no other gift. Mm-mm. Nothing can match that.
No, it's the only reason why I was doing it as a volunteer for 12 years was because I was getting something in return.
Right.
And I have to tell you this really quick story. It was really funny. So I knew something was happening, right? And I was like, we're having this success. We were packing the room every night and they were trying to figure out what in the heck is this guy teaching? And the only thing we were teaching was possibilities. Like, okay, here's the other side of that, right?
Big word I use.
Right.
I love possibilities.
Right. So I team up with the university and I was like, I'm interested to see what happens if we follow some of the people over a year's period of time and see what happens if they, you know, how they register against people who went to the class and those who didn't go to the class. And then we find out, we did a basic anecdotal conversation study from the University of Denver, that the people who basically went to the class, when we talked about possibilities, were 36% less likely to return to homelessness.
Right.
So I'm like, oh, we're onto something.
Yes.
So I go to the big homeless organization in the city. I won't name names because I don't want people to get funky. But I go and I say, listen,
This works.
They looked at me. This is a table surrounded by PhDs. They looked at me and they said, okay, thank you. Don't call us. We'll call you. I said, don't you want to at least look at the studies? Look and see what we found out. They were like, no, we're good. Thank you. The next day they sent me out a form letter and say, oh, don't worry about, you know, thank you. We'll call you at some future date. So I go to my mentor and I was like, are you kidding me?
Exactly.
What happened? And he looked at me and he said, knucklehead, what did you think was going to happen? I said, well, we're trying to end homelessness. He said, everybody ain't trying to end homelessness.
No.
These guys.
Who capitalizes from it?
Mm. Yes. Mm-hmm. They get paid on how many people they serve. And you're talking about reducing the amount of people they serve, which would not benefit their financial structure.
Like the pharmaceutical companies,
like
right? It benefits them for you to stay sick.
Yes.
You know, when we're talking about that revolution that we are in right now, the future that is in front of us, it is entirely an inside job.
Yeah.
The only way we are going to move forward to those possibilities, the only way we're going to make it happen is if each and every single one of us are willing to go in and do our inside job.
Yes.
Connect with us. Our soul wisdom cannot talk to a closed heart.
Yes.
Healing, and you know, I use this analogy a lot, but when you look at a diamond, it is made up of a lot of fractals.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And the more of those fractals are in place, the more it creates a strong, unbreakable, beautiful diamond.
Mm.
Every single one of those things that's happened in a Taurus life are these fractals coming together to strengthen us. Mm. All we need is a little polishing to shine bright.
Yes.
But yes, we've got to get in there and put those pieces together to become that diamond. We've got to be willing to go in there and strengthen and love ourselves so that we can bring that love to other. As corny as it says, there are trillions of songs out there that would tell you, yes, love is the answer.
Yeah, love is the answer. My favorite one is always the one by England Dan and John Ford Coley, Love is the Answer. I used to play that all the time.
You know, love is all. It really is. It. And why is love is all? Well, if you want to look at it from a scientific point of view, if you want to look at it at a practical point of view, when you look at the actual measurement of the frequency of a state of love, when you actually see the hertz, the vibration, mm-hmm, that you cannot be in that state of love and vibration and knowingly hurt anyone else. Yeah. Because if you do, it hurts you.
Yes. Well, that's the whole Ubuntu connectedness.
Yes.
The concept that if we are all connected, the last thing you would want to do is say, do I really want to put myself in slavery? Do,
right,
I really want to create genocide against,
yes,
myself? Would I ever want to drop a bomb on me?
Yeah.
So the disconnection, that we could have a whole show on that.
Oh, boy. Well, that is actually the crux of the matter.
Yeah.
You know, there are powers that be, like, mm-hmm, the people that you presented. Mm-hmm. It's one, it's in it for me. Mm-hmm. And I don't care if the world has gone to hell, as long as I'm all right.
That's amazing. That's an amazing point of view, but it's a truth.
It is, unfortunately. And until the uprising, the human uprising is of love, kindness, and caring towards ourselves and one another.
Yep.
We see creativity, we see innovation, we see possibilities, we see the future.
Yes.
When we step into that higher frequency.
Yes.
We know what we need to do in order to make things better because, yes, we're in that visionary vibration.
We are.
Those lower vibrations won't stand a chance, not a chance, mm-hmm, with everybody else in the higher vibrations. They're going to have to change their ways,
mm,
or go by the way of the dinosaur.
Yes. So I always tell my people, I said, you know, because they're like, okay, how do we get everybody on board? I said, just start with you and we'll, yeah, work it out.
Forget
we'll
about everybody.
Yeah.
It's you first. You are the everybody. Stop and really look at that. You are the everybody.
Yes.
Because everything you are and everything you do, it affects everybody around you.
Right. So here's the other thing that I say too, and I recognize part of this is my Capricorn nature, but the other part is just once you do the work, there's a phrase I put in my first book. It says, it's not about them, it's about you.
Yes.
But once it's about you, it's about them.
100%. I like it.
Yes. So it's this work that you do inside, and then you start to realize that now all you're trying to do is actualize, mm, that which you know deep inside. Then it becomes about how do I serve? So, yeah, so you don't have to like, okay, we need to get some ideas, because the ideas will come from you simply because this is entrenched. There's something that there's a foundation laid here about love being that answer. And,
yeah,
and now it seeks to manifest itself. It can't help it,
but can't
manifest
help it.
Itself.
When that love train starts going, baby, you can't stop it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It gathers, yeah, momentum, and,
yes,
it just, you know, that steam starts going out and captures everybody. I mean, why do we go play music and all dance together? Why do we love celebrating? Mm-hmm. Why do we love coming together, dining and breaking bread together? Because it is a love vibration. It lifts us up. It feeds us. It gives us joy. And when we're in that joy, you know, we see things from a much more loving perspective.
Yes.
So why can we not stay in that state of beingness? We can. We don't want the sugar high. We don't want to. You look at a frequency and you look at our DNA. It's twisted and it's constantly moving like this.
Yes.
We don't want the extreme highs and the extreme lows,
right,
because those don't serve anybody. They are destructive towards us.
Yes. Yes.
Do you know the Celtic runes?
I know of them. I actually took a class. The most I know about the Celtics just the Celts was the I did my minor is in Indo-European mythologies. So I have some basic stuff about them, enough to be dangerous.
Well, I mean, you know, I come from that background and I love the runes, you know, and some people hate them, but they're very much about telling you where you're at now, in the now. They're very much about the present. And yeah, I used to get disruption a lot, the Hagglass rune, and it'd be, until I realized what a gift it was. It was disrupting what was not serving me. We're in a state of disruption right now. We're cleaning house right now. We've called the junk people to come and take away the junk that we don't need anymore. Right? And this is the state that we're in right now, but we're kind of covered in dust and dirt while we're doing it. But when we get cleaned off and everything else around us is in place, now we kind of really have stepped into a place more of clarity.
Yes, I believe that. And here's one other thing, if I can add to that, that one of the things that I learned from working with the homeless. If you, and I've leaned away from just saying, okay, what you're believing or what you're doing is wrong. But what happens is that they'll go into this space and they'll say, man, I've been seeing this stuff and it doesn't work. It's wrong. If you don't provide another way, you leave them in a vacuum and they can collapse under the weight of not having anything there. People, they need that vacuum filled. And in fact, if the vacuum is not filled, it's usually filled with fear. So
and distrust and anger, frustration, and violence, and all of that manifests from it.
So while we're doing the deconstruction, we actually need to do or concentrate on the reconstruction. What would that look like? What are the possibilities? How do we get there from here? Because now, once this is in place, it needs that level of support. And I'm a build out kind of guy. Like I said, some of it's just my Capricorn self, but I'm a true build out kind of guy, so that people, so that there's just more room at the table, make the table bigger.
So. I'm a Libra, so I'm always trying to balance everything, because it's, you know, when things are out of balance, you feel topsy-turvy. So, and it's not about the perfect balance, steadfast. It's about the rhythm of things slightly going up and down and a lovely flow. Again, what we don't want is the absolute extremes, because that throws people off kilter. I'm also in the true colors of screaming blue, so I'm an air sign. So, you know, don't box me in, I've got a flow. But I think that's also where I see, you know, the possibilities, the visions, because I'm constantly in flow and open, ready to receive. Let us stop looking at people as broken. You know, or they're fractalizing, right? They're gathering all their fractals to create this beautiful diamond that they really are. They just haven't been polished yet. They haven't come all together yet. And let's look at them and saying, okay, you know, from the bottom, there can only be going up. And all that we need from you is the willingness to stand up, the willingness to climb up, the willingness to see what other opportunities are there and to participate in your own life. Now, whether somebody is homeless or whether they're a CEO, that applies to everybody.
I like that. I love that. Yeah, it applies to everybody. It's across the board.
Yeah. I mean, the way you see the future is because you see the possibilities within us as human beings. What we're capable of, what kind of society we can create, how we can actually structurally build that future that is more serving of us all. So that's, you know, it's not, as you said, the flying cars and the this and that. Those creations will come about because we have given that freedom to people to see the clarity, to see the possibilities, and to be creative. Instead of just surviving, they'll be thriving.
That's my hope and that's my belief. I'm committed to that belief. I'm committed to making sure that we create infrastructure and ecosystems that reflect that truth. If we don't, it becomes a nice conversation, but
not going anywhere.
Because the mothers are asking, how am I going to feed my babies?
Right.
We can't answer that question. It kind of pulls like the lock out of the key out of the lock, because that's the question that they're asking right now. How am I going to feed my babies?
Yes.
And if we can't get to that then we need to rethink how we're walking in this space, because it has to translate.
It does.
It has to translate across the board, across economics, social structures, gender, space, cultures. If it doesn't, then maybe it might be self-indulgence. And I've run into a few groups where there's just been a lot of indulgence.
There's an awful lot of spiritual groups that are just another form of religion, you know, and it's mine is the only way, and it's very restricted, and that's not what spirituality is all about. It is actually about the sharing of divine energy and uplifting other people. And, you know, talking about feeding your mother, if somebody isn't secure in their foundation, they haven't got a roof over their head, they don't know where their next meal is coming from, they're afraid for their children. If they don't have that security in their basic needs, how are they ever going to be able to see up and rise up and take that step up? Because they're hungry and they're scared and they're living in fear. So as human beings, we owe it to each other without judgment, without shame or blame, to be there for each other. At the same time, we have the obligation to assist people helping us and not slap the hand.
Yeah.
Right? And it is that you can't help anyone that's unwilling to be helped.
Yeah, no, that's not our job. Our job is to hold the space, create it, and make sure that there are enough chairs at the table so everybody can sit down.
Even if there's an empty chair there for a while until they come.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. You plant the seeds, you keep watering, and one day they'll realize they're a flower.
I like to think of the journey that I'm on. I call it working class enlightenment.
Well, I like that.
It does. Yeah. Yes. So it doesn't get too, because I was in circles where it was more ethereal. And I think that people, you know, it turned me off. And then I can imagine how it kind of put people into a box. And that's how you can keep people from being able to access, or at least to know of that. Now, everybody's on their own journey.
Yeah.
Granted. However, how we represent that which we believe as that truth can make all the difference in the world at a time of dramatic change. And now is the time for us to really, really step into this and embrace the madness of the moment, because it's the only time we really get a chance to reconfigure, retool, reset everything. And otherwise, we basically it'd be a murder-suicide pact.
You know, right,
slow one at that, so, yeah.
You know, everybody has a role to play in this world. And, you know, I've been a spiritual person my entire existence, lifetimes and everything else. That's who I am. Okay. You know, I can't fight that. I'm kind of that, the gate greeter. So yes, people are willing to kind of cross over, open up, and they've decided to open up their heart and soul. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm there to help them on those first steps by showing them who are there to help them.
I know that's right. That's what I'm saying. You're doing the stuff, but you're doing the sacred work and we're leveraging these platforms.
I'm the lift elevator. You need department so and so. You know, and it's like, you know, they say there's an app for everything. I say, I've got a show pretty well for everything. And whatever you're going through, I've got somebody who can help you there. Whether you listen, whether you reach out, or whether you learn, that is entirely up to you. Mm-hmm. All it is for me to do is connect.
I love it. I'm just thankful that I had the opportunity to be in your space.
Oh, right back at you, love. I mean, you know, people, as they say, futuristic, they think of, you know, the movies where, you know, you look at the space movies of the 50s and 60s as to where we are today, the technology. Yeah. I mean, Star Trek has had so many problems with, you know, going back in time, trying to match it. I don't know if you've been watching the you know, the 55 years Star Trek shows that have been on, which have been fascinating. Yeah. And it's how they have even got a movie made. I don't know. But I love those kind of visionaries that can see what a world could be in the future. And if you look at it, every single common denominator is in there. We only thrive when humankind come together.
Yes. That everybody knows the truth.
Yeah.
That secret, it's not even a secret.
No.
It's we know the truth that when we are connected And when we recognize the connection, when we start to actualize it and live infrastructure based around connection,
yeah,
that's when all of a sudden the whole wheel changes. And I think that this is that moment. Now, at this very moment, like I said, both things exist at the same time.
Yes.
We could collapse under the weight of our foolishness, or we can rise. And so I think we have to lean into the rising part.
Yes.
Those of us who know it.
Yes.
Here's that possibility that is above and beyond even your wildest imagination.
We at the present moment need to be the wind underneath their wings.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. And yeah, as they start taking flight, they're wibbly, they're wobbly, and we're there helping to stabilize them. But the higher they go, the more they begin to see, the more they begin to trust those wings, the more they begin to want to fly.
Yes. I believe that truth. I do. You know what? I'm committed to it. So I'm good.
You when you reach that part of your life where you know you've stepped into your meaningful purpose, mm-hmm, whether you're committed to it or not, I'm sorry, that's who you are.
That's who you are.
You can't change it. You know, you are who you are for a reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And you're good. And I keep telling people, I say, you know, I'm good.
Yeah, exactly.
However way it works, I'm good.
Right.
Bottom line is that I'm showing up in the way that my ancestors would have wanted me to show up. And I'm clear about it, and I'm committed. And if I can do that, I have lived the life that I was supposed to live at this particular time.
And for you, even for me, it's always the cosmic universe is my wind, but for you, the ancestors, because when you look at the way the ancestors used to work together,
yes,
right, and the tribes and the ethics and the morals and everything else that were there, you know, going way back, you're taking people back to that core belief and core roots. So yes, that's your compass. That's your guidance symbol.
Yes.
In what drives you forward. Mm-hmm. As we learn to connect to our hearts and souls and spirits, we discover what is ours.
Yeah.
And what is that instrument? How are we meant to play it? Who are we meant to play it to? And it's like, don't try and be like someone else, because mm-hmm, we're all gifted with something. And if something is so strong in you, yeah, for God's sake, don't suppress it or deny it. Yes. Set it free.
Yeah, I believe that. And the more that we share the word out there, in that regard, people will set it free.
Yes.
Because then they'll say, there's others?
Oh, yes, I'm not alone. No, you're not folks, alone. Ever. Yeah. You're never alone.
We're social creatures, right?
We are.
So we're always looking for the connection. And that's a good thing, that we want to be connected.
Yes.
It's not bad.
Let's take competitive and comparison out of connection.
Yes.
Then we start seeing each other for who we really are, inside out. Yes. I really don't care what containment you come in.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to see your heart and your soul. If I resonate with that, you could be an alien, maybe an alien, who knows? I don't care. It's about, do I see your heart? Do I see your soul? Do I see your intentions? Mm-hmm. Right? If we could start connecting on that level, yeah, all form of racism would go, because we just wouldn't see it. There wouldn't be a need for it. There's never been a need for it, but we wouldn't make an excuse for it.
Yeah, yeah. I think... you know, systems have been created to differentiate. I keep saying
suppression.
The lens, if you're a hammer, everything becomes a nail, right?
Yes.
So if you are looking at disconnection or othering, it could be race, gender, whether your color of your eyes, whether you're left-handed or right-handed, they will find a way to create that level of differentiation.
Yes.
So that becomes key for us to recognize that if there are those who are seeking differentiation for the sake of othering others so that they can somehow create value for themselves, we must create just the opposite. The value is in connection.
Yes.
The value is in community.
Yes.
And we have to have tangible examples, like here's where that value shows up.
Yes.
Maybe it doesn't show up as profit, but more like abundance. Because
and dignity and respect.
Yeah, living a life of dignity.
Yeah.
People are always looking for just the basics of living a life of dignity. And we don't provide that to them, but that's what they're really looking
right
for. I always say this, you know, people say, oh, people just want to be millionaires. People want to be millionaires because they're looking for a life of dignity.
Yes.
So it's not the millionaire
respect,
part they want. No. They just want the life of dignity.
Yes.
And then be able to take care of their kids and have food on the table,
right,
and be able to laugh with their friends and have a glass of wine from time to time.
Yeah.
That's what people really want. And they figure that if I can't get it in just this space, I'll get it by being a millionaire. So there's a misconception about money and profit.
Well, it's they've been sold a bill of goods.
Yeah.
And really basically it's buyer beware.
Yeah.
Buyer beware. I mean, you know, they're on the social medias, on the TV, all those people that you look up to. And you know, what we're seeing, the greatest gift they're giving us right now is sharing their vulnerability, sharing their struggles, sharing their insecurities. Yeah. All right. So what, I'm a millionaire. So what, I'm hot stuff. But you know, I suffer from depression, or I have this, I have that. And the more they share, the more they make them feel real, and the more they make them feel identified, and the more you identify with them.
Yes. Yes. So all I know is that this is a great time to be alive.
The future looks really good.
Yeah.
You know, because really, if we choose to, the brush is in our hands. Mm-hmm. And it's up to us what we paint. Yes. Please don't feed the pain of yesterday. That's been and gone. Mm. Paint the possibilities of tomorrow. Mm. And, you know, that vision board. I did a vision board donkeys years ago. Mm-hmm. Not all of it's manifested, and it may never. But the point is, I painted vision. And it's not about what you want to get. It's on how you want to feel.
Yes.
The universe goes by the vibration of your feeling, mm-hmm. not your thoughts.
Yes. So there's so many possibilities. I'm excited about that. And I'm excited to be a futurist.
Yes. I like it. I like it a lot. So how do people get hold of you and your organization, and whom do you serve and whom can you serve, et cetera?
Absolutely. We serve everybody. I'll say this, that the best way of reaching us is at universalbasicresources.com. It is the organization. What we basically do is really provide an online support for those who may say, there's got to be more.
Yeah.
We go into health and wellness, spiritual support, the circular economy, which I took, I'm a graduate of Cambridge University. One of the things I started realizing is that if we're going to talk about a new space, we have to talk about a new economy that reflects that which we believe.
Yes.
I believe that's the circular economy. New leadership models, and of course, me talking about climate change, adaptation, and resilience, and what does an adaptive and resilient community look like? So we're putting meat on the bones. Like I said, we're a working class enlightenment, so we want to make sure that there are tools out there for people who are saying, "I want to know what this could possibly look like."
You're building it so they will come.
Yeah. You know, exactly. Feel the dreams.
Yeah.
So it really is. So I want to really encourage everybody, again, it's universalbasicresources.com, or just look up chetsisk.com. Either one, it'll take you to the same spot. And it just talks about all of the things we're doing. We have a special emphasis to be able to empower communities of color that have been left behind in so many different ways. And so we've created some infrastructure around that. But the UBR masterclass is for everybody. We want to make sure that everybody attends and see what we're doing. Just really check out and see what we're doing. And even more importantly, take the quiz. We have a quiz at the website that says, find out whether or not you're ready for the next few years, because the next few years will be the most dynamic, and I would say in many generations.
Whether you like it or not, folks, change is happening.
Yeah.
You know, everything is happening to shake us up, wake us up, making us stand up, change it up, etc. It's all there. It's just that either we get with it or we get left behind. And that's the bottom line of it, right? And the thing is that if we stand up and embrace it and we become a part of the vision of it, we are the builders. We're the builders of it. And we could create the world we want. Oh, the world sucks. Okay. All right. The world sucks. What are you going to do about it? Step up.
Exactly.
But you don't have to do it alone.
You've created
the structure. You've created the arena. You've created the invitation. Mm-hmm. Right. And come on in. And it doesn't matter if you are literally backside on the ground right now, bottomed out. Who cares? It's just a question, are you willing to stand up? Because if you are, then put one foot in front of the other and we'll help you get further, right?
Exactly. Come check me out. We'll walk with you.
Exactly.
We'll walk with you.
Yeah, we've been bruised too. We've been battered. Yeah, we know what it's like. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
We will walk with you. That's the beauty.
Yes.
We will walk with you.
As we are meant to be, we are meant to walk with each other. Yes. You know, when I'm talking about futuristic space movies, Avatar is one of my favorites too.
Oh.
You haven't seen that?
I have seen Avatar.
Right. Right, the new one's coming out at the end of the year. But the thing I liked about that is, you know, they have the tree and the mother tree, and it is of all the ancestors that have been before. So it's the tree of wisdom. Mm-hmm. But it's also, even if you killed, you say thank you in gratitude for your contribution. May your spirit be free. Mm-hmm. There was always the respect for the land, for the people, for everything else. And I think, let us go back to that common thing of respect and dignity. Let us not look at each other from a differences or a judgment. Let's look at each other from a kindness and a caring and a possibility, and from the heart and the soul. And, you know, stop denying and depriving yourself all the beauty and the abundance in life because you're only seeing differences and you're not seeing sameness.
Yeah, well, I guess that we'll walk with you on that journey, so that even when you stumble or tumble or whatever, that you're not alone. As again, the spirit of Ubuntu says that I am because we are. We are because I am. So
1,000,000,000% great quote. And, you know, and that is where we are the one.
Yes.
Right? It's not abstaining and becoming part of the Borg. It is bringing your beautiful abundance. The cellular structure in our body are in the trillions. Mm-hmm. What happens when one cell starts breaking down? It breaks down the other cells. What happens? The whole body becomes sick. We need everybody's cell to be plump and juicy so that the collective can be.
Yes, yes. I think we'll get there.
I know we'll get there. You know, I hope in my lifetime, I hope to see those changes. It's going to be ongoing for a long time, but I would like to see enough. I know the shift is happening. We're just not in the mainstream media, and anytime you see anything like this, it's always belittled and demeaned, because the status quo is afraid of it. Sure. But there is enough of us out there that we are changing the current, changing the tide, as you said, at the grassroots level. So come and join us, folks. Thank you so much for sharing here today. It's been wonderful having you on,
Sarah. It is my pleasure and my honor. And anytime you just want somebody to come
on back. Come on back when you've got pleasure. Something to share, more stories to share. You just reach out, please. Come on back. I love having repeat guests. When the energy is there and it's right, let's keep pushing the button and take flight, right? Yeah. And there's so many things that we can do and support with one another. And it's just a question, let's come together. The Beatles had it. Let's come together right now. So thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you. I appreciate you so much.
And until next time, folks, remember, the future is absolutely great if we're willing to participate in it. You are not alone. Chet is there for you. He's built the structure in which for you to walk on. He'll walk alongside of you. He'll share your vision with you, because we are all in this together. So let's build a future that we all want to be in. Until next time. Bye for now. We hope that you enjoyed the show right here at selfdiscoverymedia.com. Please tune in to our selfdiscoverymedia.com/shows, and you will see all the other genres that we have from you. Every week on Tuesday, we bring you new shows from illuminating people. If you know someone that should be interviewed, please contact us at info@selfdiscoverymedia.com. Now stay tuned for your next show.